Hi, everyone. This is Mike Fulfame. We're on a private call with a friend of mine, Frank Kern, and I'll give you my little background about him in just a minute. So if you're doing any multitasking right now and maybe being on the computer and listening to this call, I would recommend you just do one. So probably shut off this call and finish surfing the web, because you're not going to learn too much on this call. I can promise you that. But the guy that I'm talking to right now, Frank Kern, is the person that may have heard, if you've ever heard my story before, that got me started online in marketing back in October of 2002. I got an email from one of Frank's resellers for one of his very first information products. And I read the sales letter, and I remember something on the sales letter that said, print this page. Back then, we used to put that on sales letters. And I actually printed the page, and I think it was like 11 or 15 pages that came out of my printer. I sat down on the floor, and I read every single word of the sales letter. And I got so excited, I hit the order button, and immediately, I'm landing into a members area where I'm hearing these videos, and I'm hearing, hi, this is Frank Kern, and I'm going to walk you through the steps of putting up your websites. And so I followed the videos, and I quickly got attached to Frank. I got on his newsletter. I got involved in everything he was doing. So Frank is my original mentor, and he was and is my online hero. I've always looked up to Frank. So let me introduce you guys to Frank Kern. Frank, how are you?
I'm doing great, man. That's very nice of you to say all that kind of stuff. I have to have my disclaimer in there that I cannot be held liable for introducing you into the internet marketing world and the addiction that follows once you make that first dollar, or in your case, first gazillion dollars online. But I'm glad you got that email on that fateful day. You've been a great example of what can happen with just a little bit of work, in your case, a lot of very smart work and very hard work, but sky's the limit.
Yeah, it was, I remember, Frank, I got that email. It was a spam email. It was from somebody that was sending spam. And things were a little bit different back in 2002. There wasn't even a Ken Spam Act, so it wasn't illegal. I'm definitely not condoning what that person did, but things were a little bit different in the opportunity world. Newbies would back then, just buy up email addresses and they'd buy names and they would just start sending out emails. So, what that person did was very wrong, but for me, it did end up changing my life completely, because I remember I got that email several times, and the subject line was Secrets to Online Profits. And along with, the Viagra emails and the porn emails and everything that I was getting to my Hotmail account, my MSN account, that one was there every single day, and I just kept deleting it. And then one day I said, let me see what this is all about. And I remember clicking on, this image of this guy pumping his fist in the air with dollar bills stuffed in his hands. And it was a graphic inside my email, so I clicked on it, and it brought me to that website. So talk about, completely, changing your life from the click of a button. I know that sounds cliche, but it certainly did. So, Frank, that brings us back to October of 2002. Where was that in your online career? Maybe we can, I know there's a lot of people that come on the internet all the time, and they many of them listening to this recording don't know my story and they don't know your story. So, I think that's some of the best things when you can hear somebody's story. So, how did you get started with all this?
Well, I'll give you the brief tale of events leading up to that moment in time when our lives crossed, even though we didn't know each other. And I guess this portion of our conversation could be filed under the you never know what's going to happen in your life portion, because, in this case, truth is really going to be stranger than fiction. So back in, 99, I had a business with a partner in Macon, Georgia, where we sold credit card machines door-to-door. And by credit card machines, I mean the terminals where, if you own the donut store or whatever, you have the little credit card machine and you swipe the guy's card. Well, I was the guy that sold those credit card machines. So my partner and I went door-to-door, and we put on suits and, did our normal person presentation and everything, uninvited, of course, this cold call door-to-door selling to businesses in the 100-plus degree Macon, Georgia summer heat. And I soon grew really tired of that. I was like, you know, this is not fun at all. I'm sweating. Nobody wants to talk to me because I'm an uninvited guest in their world. I'm just, you know, walking in their place of business, interrupting them, trying to sell them something, and there's got to be a better way. So I started looking around on the Internet, and my plan was to sell the credit card machines on the Internet because, you know, right around that time was when Internet commerce really started taking off. It was before the bubble burst in the dot-com era, you know, and you're, like, constantly hearing about, you know, Maude in Wyoming makes $1 billion with her, knitting supply store or whatever. So I wanted to get in on that, and I wanted to be the guy that supplied the merchant accounts and the credit card services to all these people getting in business. So that desire led me to start searching around on how to market stuff on the Internet and how to make money, and that's where I came across Corey Rudel's stuff. So I'm sure that that most people that are listening to this are familiar with the late Corey Rudel's work. He was like the godfather of our entire Internet marketing industry. He was the very pioneer of this stuff. So I bought his course, and he had all this excellent information in there, and I paid attention to one paragraph of it, which was if you spam people, then maybe you'll make some money. And of course, like you said earlier, this is before spam was illegal and before, you know, sending spam put you on the same level as Bin Laden and everything. So I bought some spam software and started spamming people, trying to find out if anyone wanted credit card machines and wanted to set up a business and have credit card machines. I'm still selling credit cards at this point. So I get a couple takers, you know, and I cultivate this little portfolio of people selling stuff online, and one of my clients was a guy, I won't say his name, no one would know him anyway, but he was selling this product that was basically CD-ROM with reprint rights to a gazillion reports, and he was doing really well with it. So I call him up, I was like, hey man, will you show me how to do really well with this thing? He's like, sure, I send out spam, you know. So I'm like, oh, okay, great, well, I've already got that part down because I spammed you, and that's how you became my client, you know. And again, this is 1999, so in October of 1999, I literally gave my interest in the credit card company to my partner and started spamming this CD-ROM thing full time. And for the next
five, you got to remember back then. That's when, you know, 70% of the email addresses out there were AOL. I'm remembering back in '99, things were different. It was, you were excited to get email. You know, if you didn't have email, you know, you felt like you were in open world, and when you heard you've got mail, you were like, hey, great, somebody's sending me something about some, X-ray radar that I can put a camera up in my house. We used to love that type of mail. This was before it was extremely annoying.
Yeah, and before it was illegal. It just wasn't a big deal, but people didn't like it back then. Like, you were considered not cool if you spam, but it was in no way illegal. So anyway, I was like, I did it for about 5 or 6 months, and I started to get a little bit freaked out because I was thinking, you know, I'm sending this email to people, and a lot of them don't want it, and I'm having to go through all these steps to make sure that my internet service provider doesn't catch me for sending spam, and this is just no way to have a long-term business, and this kind of sucks. And plus, I wasn't making any money, right? So that's all of that stuff is a bad combination, really. You know, like being freaked out and not making any money doesn't really go good together hand in hand. So I'm like, okay, you know, I set this goal, and the goal was by May of, I can't remember, we'll say 2000 or something, or 2001, I want to figure out a way not to be sending spam anymore. And I had another thing, I was selling stuff where I had to ship it physically, and that was a hassle. So I actually set two goals. Goal number one was I don't want to have to send spam anymore because it freaks me out. And goal number two is I want to sell a product that's downloadable so I don't have to ship anything and have this hard cost that eats up my profits. Both very, you know, worthwhile goals. So fast forward about 10 months, still spamming, nothing's working, investigating and studying marketing to try to figure out how I can make money without having to be a spammer and what actually works, you know, and getting my chops down and getting the fundamentals. And then, lo and behold, I discover a product by my now friend, Yannick Silver. And the product was called Autoresponder Magic. Mike, I don't know if you remember this thing, but it was a little ebook.
Yes, I remember. Yeah. It was part of the course I bought from you, actually. One of the weeks.
Yeah, well, Yannick is really to blame for all of this, actually. I think we should hold him singularly responsible. So I get Autoresponder Magic, and Autoresponder Magic is this little e-book, and it's like $25 or something, and it's got all these autoresponders that people have used to grow their businesses. It was a great concept. And the hook to it was, if you buy it for $19 or whatever, you can resell it. You have master resale rights to it, which means you can resell it, and not only can you resell it, but you can give other people the rights to resell it as well, ad infinitum. So I'm thinking, wow,
that's let me just frame that. Let me frame that for the people that are listening, because when we hear that now, it's just, I mean, we just hear it, you know, private label rights and master resale. I mean, we just hear it now like it's, you know, it's like anything else. You know, it's like McDonald's. But back then, that was pretty revolutionary, right? I mean, when, you know, when something came out like that with master resale, or was it resale or master? I don't even know what it was. But when that came out, that was pretty revolutionary in the ebook industry, and the people that got it, people like you, well, that was like, wow, I can take this and I can market this and really do something pretty significant with it, right?
Yeah, do something pretty big with it. And I've purchased resale rights packages before to offline stuff, which I was selling online, but it was physical, tangible things, and those were always in the thousands of dollars. So ebooks themselves at that period of time were a big deal. They were kind of revolutionary, and the master resale rights concept, especially for $25 or whatever the cost was huge, you know, and it was brilliant on Yannick's part because it just built his list, because the ebook you were selling had all these little backlinks to his stuff, and it was great. But my experience in trying to sell business opportunity stuff, when I was trying to sell the CD-ROM and when I was trying to sell the courses, the big, you know, books and tapes and stuff I had the rights to, a major objection that I had when people would write back to me, like, I would buy your stuff, but dot, 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 it was always, I don't want to spend a lot of money. So what I was hearing from the marketplace was, I want my own business, I want it on the Internet, but I don't want to spend a lot of money, period, the end. So I was thinking, okay, how can I provide this to people? You know, what would be the optimum solution? And it presented itself in Yannick's concept, which was, sell an ebook that has master reprint rights to it. So for $25, they get some content, and they get basically a business in a box. They want their own business. They don't want to spend a lot of money. Bam. So then I asked the question, which everyone should always ask this question when they're thinking about their businesses and their marketing, is what can make this better, right? So I figured, okay, well, if people will get excited and buy, you know, this one ebook for $25, wouldn't they get really excited if I could find five similar products and bundle them together and sell that as one bundle for, say, $47? And that's how I created the now infamous Instant Internet Empires program, which is what you received, and which is what I got absolutely clobbered for selling by the Federal Trade Commission. So
we can probably talk later about that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there's a couple of things about Internet Empires that was I'll tell you like what was going through my mind, why I thought it was the perfect product. Number one, you were giving people master resale rights to five different products. Number two, you were teaching them how to do it. They were getting a video course that's going to show you. And back then, this was like, wow, you know, I mean, what the hell is a domain name, and what do you mean by a host? Are they two different things? I don't even know what that means. But here, you're walking people, you know, with this very easy-to-follow video. Like, so what you want to do now is you want to go to this place called PageMatic, and, you know, or whatever it was, 000 domains. I forget what you were recommending back
so
then.
Funny you still remember PageMatic. That's awesome. Yeah, those were the guys. They paid me $2.50 a month per referral, if you can believe that.
Yeah, that had to be pretty good, because I know I spoke with those guys on the phone, because I recommended them, you know, when I did that carbon copy marketing, and maybe we'll get into that a little bit later, because, you know, I was, you know, I brought it out to, like, 41 videos, you know, with the autoresponder and the ads I'm using and stuff like that. You know, I saw what you did, and I said, you know, and it worked for me, and I said, so my thing was to, you know, show people what I did. But what was really interesting with what you did was, not only did you give them the products to sell, not only did you teach them how to do it, but the big hook to me was, as you're reading the sales letter, then you throw in, not only are you going to get the products, not only am I going to teach you how to do it, but I'm also going to give you the sales letter as well. So the exact same sales letter that you're reading right now, you have the rights to, and you can go out and sell. So, like, that was a click for me. That's like, well, if I'm sold at this point, then everybody else is going to be sold at this point, and I'm going to be the one selling it. And they have a product to sell, and this guy's going to teach them how to do it. So I think that was one of the big secrets to instant internet empires that made that so successful. And can you just throw out some vague numbers, Frank, of how many people you estimated? Because you don't really know how many people purchased it because it was through resale rights. But on your estimates, how many people do you think went through that product?
Well, I can tell you that I personally sold over 18,000 copies of it, and it was only promoted heavily for like a year or whatever, and that was me selling it without the resellers. And so that was $650-something thousand worth of sales. Now, what's funny, when you mentioned Instant Internet Empires, is in the beginning of our conversation, you said you got that email, which was a piece of spam. What ended up happening with it is people bought the resale rights to it, and they would spam the crap out of it. So the email that you got actually was not from me, and that's really what led to my downfall.
Correct.
Of the whole thing was these companies, I won't even say who they are, but they certainly don't have my well wishes. They would basically say they were me, they would sell Instant Internet Empires to people, and then they would have telemarketers call those buyers, and the telemarketers would either say they were me or say that they were my partners or that they were my employees or whatever, and they'd sell them these coaching packages on the phone for $5,000 or $6,000, and there's nothing wrong with that conceptually, but the coaching packages weren't any good, and then they wouldn't give refunds. And so, you know, the world thought that was me. I would have like ex-girlfriends writing me, you know, after getting this piece of spam from Frank Kern, you know, and like says I made $8 billion or whatever on the internet. They're like, hey, how's it going? I just want to check in with you or whatever. Like, yeah, right, you know. And I just say, listen, that wasn't me. Ignore that stuff, you know. I'm married now. Please don't contact me. You're freaking me out or whatever. But what made that product so universally appealing is that it suited the needs of the market at the time. People wanted to start their own business, and they didn't want to spend a lot of money doing it. So Instant Internet Empires helped them do that. I would never advise anyone to create a similar product because the master resale rights thing is what got me in tremendous trouble. The government viewed that as a pyramid scheme. I don't agree with their interpretation of that, but you know, whatever.
Would you tell people not to create a master resale rights product just for that reason?
I wouldn't, you know, and that's just me being all freaked out. You know what I mean? That's I don't want to do anything that can remotely get you in trouble. And had I had any idea that Instant Internet Empires could have gotten me in trouble, I wouldn't have done it. You know, my goal was to stay out of trouble, be way under the radar. If you do master reprint rights, I would strongly suggest staying out of the business opportunity market. I think what got me hammered on Instant Internet Empires was that sales letter, because I was giving away the master reprint rights to the sales letter, which said, I made $115,000 or whatever, and you can too. So that sales letter was like essentially saying anyone, or in the government eyes anyway, was saying anyone who buys this will make $115,000 by reselling this, which isn't, you know, what the sales letter actually said, but still. So I think if I'd have given them like a generic sales letter for it, talking about how great the product was, then maybe I wouldn't have gotten in trouble. But I would personally not do master resale rights to business opportunity products, because they can you can end up with people using your name, you know, which is what happened to me. Like, they take the shortest possible route to make the sale, and in that case it was like, hey, let's say we're Frank and just carbon copy this website and, you know, send millions upon millions of emails all over the place. So like, I was literally
changing the sales letters.
Yeah, they changed the sale. Like that graphic with the dude with the fist pumping, I've never seen that in my life, you know. It's like,
right.
I would meet people at parties.
Your name was the one that signed the sales letter.
Yeah, so that was my little piece of trivia or whatever, but it's kind of funny how that whole thing, like, and now, what is it, 5 years later, here we are on the telephone, you've got this giant empire, I've gone on to do other things and have had good success with it, and Yannick, who is solely and singularly responsible for everything because he created Autoresponder Magic, so, you know, we can blame him for it all, he's doing well, too, and now we're all friends, so it's like, you never know what's going to happen in your life, right? It's crazy.
That's right. One of the other good side effects of that, Frank, was also that the videos, you were probably paying a lot for server download and bandwidth back then, because some of the people, rather than loading the videos up in their own server and streaming them, were actually just pointing people to your members area. So that had to help you build a pretty good list as well, because now you had all of these people selling with master resale rights, and they were selling it, and all these people were finding out about this guy named Frank Kern, and somehow finding their way onto your newsletter, and that had to be a pretty cool thing at that time, just watching organically your newsletter just start growing. Back then, when there was no noise in the internet marketing industry, there was you, there was Yannick, Armin wasn't even making that big of a name yet, but he was on his way. But it was back then. It was Marlon Sanders. It was Declan Dunn. It was Terry Dean, and the new emergence hadn't come up yet. And you were like quickly becoming this this one that everybody was attracted to because you were using video. Nobody else was. Your voice was being heard. You were doing some. I remember just watching this. This interview with you, I don't know who it was, maybe Sean Casey or somebody, but every single time you spoke, like this thing would show up over your picture and put a square over your picture, and when they spoke, the square went over their picture, and I was like looking at this thing, like, wow, this is amazing. So you were really leading the industry with audio and Camtasia video back then, especially Camtasia. I think you really brought it to the forefront of this industry.
Well, I'll tell you, everything just falls into place, you know. First of all, that video you're talking about with the talking heads, it was me and John Reese, and that was his idea. That was to promote a product that I created called Info Millionaire, which I just loved. And when the FTC sued me for Instant Internet Empires, I pulled Info Millionaire off the market out of fear. They never had a problem with it, but I was like, I'm not selling anything that has to do with making money. You know, I don't want these guys after me. Good Lord, just leave me alone, you know. Tell me what to do, and I'll do it. So I took that off. But that was Reese's idea, and I think that was the first affiliate promotional video that redirected to an affiliate's website, and it was his idea. So he was like on the very forefront of that. And the video concept, the Camtasia thing, actually came from Terry Dean. He had a membership site, which is now, I believe, owned by Kurt Christensen, and it was called Net Breakthroughs. And in Net Breakthroughs, Terry's like walking you through how to do, you know, little easy stuff, register a domain and everything. And when I had Instant Internet Empires, I started getting all these support requests from people saying, hey, you know, I like the product, it's great, how do I set up my website or whatever? And I would sit there and I'd write them the answer, like this long in-depth explanation of how to do it. And it never occurred to me to cut and paste, you know. I would just type it every single time. And then I was thinking, man, you know, I should just make them a video and say, hey, you know, I got your question. Here's a video that shows you how to do it because it'll be easier. So the whole video thing was really born out of laziness. It was just to get me so I wouldn't have to type all those answers to the customer support questions, because their questions were always the same, like, how do I get a domain name? How do I upload this stuff? How do I edit my web pages? You know, how do I set up something to take orders? And then, again, I asked the question, like, well, I've got these videos. What can make these cooler? And then I added it to the Instant Internet Empires package as, hey, here's something that's cool. You know, this is I think I called it Instant Webmaster or something, the Instant Webmaster videos. And you can have them for free as well and give them away. So it was completely unintentional viral growth. You know what I mean? I was just, like, trying to do my customers a good service and save myself some administrative headache in the process. But in doing so, it turned into lots and lots of money because the videos referred the hosting company. They referred other people who, when I made them, I didn't intend to make money off of it. But, you know, in the case of PageMatic, they actually ended up calling me on the phone like 6 months or a year later and saying, listen, we want to start paying you for all these referrals. I didn't even know I was sending referrals. I didn't think people would actually watch the videos, you know. No one ever uses the stuff they buy these days. So, but they did, so it was great.
Yeah, it's interesting because when I got turned on to that in October of 2002, and then I started marketing with an autoresponder in March of 2003. March 2nd, 2003 was when I first put Autoresponse Plus on a website and got my first name and email address, and I still remember it because every time I logged into Autoresponse Plus, that person was always at the top, so I remember. You know, I'm still referring PageMatic. I think I switched to GoDaddy instead of the 00 domains back then, but I don't even recommend GoDaddy anymore. There's so many things I point to in those videos which are probably not even online anymore, you know. But, yeah, just real, real interesting. So I'm going to tell the folks, Frank, a quick little backstory about, like, what happened with Internet Empires, and then maybe we'll go from there. So here's what happened. Frank told you very candidly that the FTC saw the way that the sales letter was written, that that you can do it too, and then if everybody was to have the same success that Frank had, that basically would max out the entire internet, you know, in five generations, and they gave him a big hard time. So basically they came knocking on his door, and they made life very, very difficult for him for a while, and Frank decided, that's it. For right now, I'm just gonna go low key, and I'm sure there's ways to make money on the internet rather than teaching people how to make money on the internet. There are these things called niches or niches, depending on where you live in the world. And I'm gonna start niche marketing. And Frank, I know that you definitely didn't invent niche marketing, but there is, you know, there is what's called, you know, perceived first in the marketplace. And even though there were people, you know, that were selling these weird niche ebooks and everything like that, you were really the first person that ever spoke about, hey, I don't have to make $50,000 with a site. I can make $1,200 a month with a site, and I can do one of these sites in about a month. So after about, you know, 12 months, I can do 12 sites making $12,000 a year, something along those lines. I remember I was listening to you on a big seminar, might have been Big Seminar 3 or 4. I bought the audios from them, and I remember you going on stage talking about your Parrot ebook. So maybe you could bring us into, like, you know, how you were brought into that, because you may not, that really wasn't the track you were going if that didn't happen with the FTC, right?
No, it wasn't at all. And again, I mean, this can be filed under "you just never know what's going to happen" thing. Like, listening to you talk about that, I'm reflecting now that, like, everything I've ever done that was really cool pretty much happened by accident without my intending it to happen. And that's exactly what happened with the niche marketing thing. Prior to my getting sued by the FTC, I had a membership website with Sean Casey. It was called Cashflow Circle. And we basically updated the members area with content every month with videos, and we would do training calls and stuff, and it was really cool, and we had a lot of people. It was a good time. And I remember getting an email from one of the customers that said, hey, you know, I don't think you guys know what the hell you're doing, because all you've ever sold is stuff about how to make money on the internet, period. So who are you to even be teaching us, you know? And I wanted to kind of dismiss it and be like, well, you know, screw you, buddy. But the fact of the matter was, the guy was right. And it really hit home with me. I was like, you know what, this dude has a point. Like, how do I know what I'm saying is even true? Because I'm just selling the dream here. I could be full of crap.
Mm-hmm.
So I was listening to one of Jeff Paul's mail order success home study courses, and it was a recording of a seminar, you know, and one of the dudes in the audience got up and started talking about how he was making, I don't know, $12,000 or $15,000 a month or something, selling stuff to parrot owners. I think it was teaching the birds how to talk, or like how to have your own parrot business or something. And I was like, oh, cool, I'll just make one of those. You know, if it worked offline, it'll probably work online. So I'll do it, and I'll prove this guy wrong. So I set up my first ever niche website, which was called yourparrotwilltalk.com. I don't even think that's my domain name anymore. I kind of abandoned it once the market got real competitive for the parrot stuff. But long story
well,
short,
you started talking about it, and everybody copied it, and then you'd see six or eight Google AdWords with clone sites for talking parrots. So
I know. Thanks, guys. Right? There were a couple dudes that did it, and they did a really good job of it. So I was like, you know, I don't need to compete with these guys, because they truly know what they're talking about, and they're good dudes. But everybody else was a peckerhead. You know, and that happens, right? You talk about something, and they get cloned. But anyway, so I was like, wow, this is cool. So when the FTC hit me, I was thinking, okay, well, I'll just make a bunch of sites like that. You know, that'll be great. And what's funny is, like, one day Armin Morin calls me and says, hey, dude, you want to speak at Big Seminar 3 or wherever it was? It was in San Francisco, I think. And I say, sure, dude. And between that day and the actual day I was supposed to speak, everything got shut down by the FTC. You know, so I show up there, and it's like everyone had known the story. I mean, it was in USA Today, for God's sake. You know, so how could you get any more embarrassing? You know? But so I get there, and I don't know what I'm going to talk about. So I totally improvised the speech that you heard, which people really enjoyed. Yeah, well, lots of people did. They're like, dude, this is great, you know. And thus the entire underachiever method for niche marketing was born. So that was completely happenstance is the way it happened. Like, I'd stayed up all night. I was freaking out. I was like, man, what am I going to talk about? You know, all these people will know that I just got hammered by the feds. They're going to be looking at me like I'm some kind of degenerate. You know what I mean? I don't know what to talk about. So that morning, it came to me at like 7:30, and I just wrote down a little page of notes and just improvised the whole thing, explaining the theory, which is basically, you know, the speech in a nutshell was, hey, there's no point, if you don't want to, in building this gigantic, intimidating business when you could just build six or seven little niche market websites where there's no competition, and if they each turn out some profit every month, that's great, because the cumulative effect can be overwhelmingly positive. And people loved it. They flipped out, so it was awesome.
Yeah, they loved it, Frank, because you weren't selling anything. Your stuff was basically like talking about why people went to that seminar. And I'm not putting down Fred Gleick, and I'm not putting down Carl Galletti, and I'm not putting down Randy Shiraz. Those are the people that I also remember on there. Like, you know, Carl Galletti was talking about Autopilot or whatever, you know, his one shopping cart private label, which was great stuff back then because we all needed to hear it. And, you know, Fred Gleick was talking about niche marketing, but really more in a way of, like, you know, how he marketed to, you know, a real weird niche of public storage people and stuff like that. And so, you know, Stephen Pierce had his, you know, his motivational stuff, and that was his first time ever on stage. But your stuff really hit with what people needed to hear. It was about... The internet is about, you know, keywords and people searching for the weirdest things in the world. And back then, there weren't too many people getting in front of those people. And I think, like you said, you never know where this stuff is going to go. But by accident, you know, you talk about something, and the next thing you know, this underground thing starts happening about niche marketing. So things happen to you now. Now you're literally doing what you're talking. You're walking your talk. You said, I'm making these niche sites, and you went on to have some pretty good success with a lot of different niche sites. Maybe you could share not how much money you were making, but how many niche sites you actually developed, and was there an 80-20 rule and that type of stuff? And then maybe we could talk about how that led you into, you know, how you and Ed, you know, Ed Dale met together and started teaching people, you know, basically the... You know, you guys are the de facto teachers of niche marketing. I mean, the underachiever method and stuff like that. So why don't we walk through there, and maybe we could start with the types of, not the niches that you were in, but like how you were developing them and how many you were doing per month and that type of stuff.
Well, yeah, okay. So I always said, like, from that one speech, and I've always maintained this, is a popular method of finding markets is to find where people have pain and then sell them a cure for the pain. And I decided I didn't want that kind of customer. I was like, you know, I don't want to be in markets where people are miserable and in pain. I want to find markets where people, like, really like something and think something is cool, and I want to sell them something that can enhance the cool or enhance the fun. So all the markets I was going into were just ways, like, how to basically enjoy whatever more, you know, whatever your hobby is, how to get more out of it or how to do it more or whatever. None of it had to do with making money. And I did maybe, let's see, I'd say I did maybe 10 or 12 of them the old way, and then I discovered, or invented, I should say, the serializer method. And out of respect to the students I taught the serializer method to, I can't explain how it works because I promised I never would after I taught those 100 people how to do it. But basically, it's you take a niche marketing concept and you just explode it, and it's like on super-duper steroids. And once I invented that, I went into one market, and now it's $1 million-a-year business in a niche market with no back end. So it works, you know. But... Yeah, I went to 10 or 12, and then necessity created serializer method, and now I've got just one niche that's I've pretty much taken over that niche, which is great. Yeah. But the way I met Ed was funny. Yeah. Go ahead.
Basically, and I'll try to be vague about it, but basically the serializer method was something along the lines of saying that, let's say that you're marketing a product to Yankee fans. Well, you could turn around and say, hey, well, you know what? I don't have to just do this to Yankee fans. I can do this to Mets fans and New York Giants fans, and I could do it to Texas Rangers fans. And you found a way to serialize it, to automate a process in a niche where it was a way to plug and play the process throughout other similar things in the niche. It was something like that, right?
Yeah, that is a very respectfully done, simplified version of what it is. So thanks for that simplicity on that. But yeah, that's basically it. And a lot of people try to reverse engineer it or whatever, and they just focus on the software and the tools application. And you know, good for them. Thank you. Keep going with that, because it's a lot deeper than that, and it's more of a process than
right. Obviously,
that's cool. So that's essentially what it was. You just take over an entire market like almost instantly. But you have to. There's some critical things you got to do in order for it to work. But anyway, so that worked like crazy, and it was never necessary for me to do it outside of one market again. But anyway, back to how I met Ed and how I became the niche guy, because that's weird in and of itself, right? So like 2 days or 1 day or whatever before that big seminar happened where I gave the underachiever speech, I was invited to participate in a meeting called the Eagles Meeting, which was put together by Ken McCarthy of the System Seminar fame. He's awesome. And anyway, so a bunch of dudes, basically what it was a roundtable mastermind meeting with a bunch of people who are selling stuff online, get up, and there's maybe 12 or 20 people or something, say, here's who I am and here's what I'm doing and, you know, here's why I think it's cool and what do you guys think and what are some ways to improve the process. So I got up and said, hey, you know, I'm Frank. I'm the guy that, you know, read about that got hammered by the FTC, and now I'm doing this niche stuff. And basically I go out and I look and I try to find little niches where people are searching between, you know, 30,000 and 100,000 times for the main keyword of the niche. And then I stick something in front of those people and I say, what do you guys want? And then I make a product based on what they say they want. And then I put a sales letter out there and I sell it to them. And I get done with my little speech and Ed Dale's there. I've never met him before in my life. He's like, dude, I'm doing the exact same thing. I'm like, no way, you know, that's killer. So he and I became instant friends, and it's easy to become instant friends with Ed because Ed's a cool dude. You know, everybody loves Ed Dale. So Ed and I become instant friends. And after I did that speech at Big Seminar, it was obvious that the whole model could be rolled out to the internet marketing crowd because of the reception I got. So I talked to Ed and I was like, listen, man, I'm real weirded out about being like the guru guy this go around because I just got sued by the Federal Trade Commission and I don't want to be the guy in the spotlight. So can we do this together? And how about you be the guy in the spotlight, you know, and I'll just be the guy behind the scenes that does the marketing or whatever. And so that was the original plan. And then of course Ed and I had so much fun doing it. We both just did it together and did seminars together and stuff, and it took off really well. But again, completely by accident, no like conscious attempt or thought at all. It was just, hey, wow, you do that? I do that too. Cool. Want to do some stuff? Yeah, great. Next thing you know, the brand was born.
Yeah, and I got to tell you, you know, kind of like what you said earlier about that guy calling you out in Cashflow Circle or his attempt to, you know, certainly, Frank, you know, I've seen that criticism, you know, in forums as well. And one thing that I've always noticed was that your group of people were just these diehard fans. I mean, they call themselves the Undies, you know, and they would refer, hey, are you an Undie, or, you know, and that type of stuff. They felt like they were part of a club. And the fact that that they were being taught by guys that really did it and were really having success, and you guys were teaching people and they were going on to have success, that kind of made that that entire group pretty special. It set you guys apart, I think, from almost everybody else out there, because number one, maybe you can share where you came up with the name Underachiever. You know, number one, I think it was by accident, but number two, I think when you came up with it, you realized how brilliant it was. Can you maybe talk about you know, why you guys had such diehard fans and some of the stuff that you did that just made you guys cult icons?
Well, I'll start with how Underachiever itself was born. I nicknamed the thing during that meeting with Ken. I called it Wealth Through Underachieving. And the notion behind the name was each one of these little niche sites is basically just this little underachiever. It's not out there to do anything spectacular. It doesn't want to take over the world or be the next big thing. It just wants to make a couple sales a day, and that's it. You know, it's underachieving. But you have an army of these underachievers, and you really got something. And it just sort of – I don't even know who, like, attached that name to it, the Underachiever Method to it. But I think the crowd did. I think the marketplace just started referring to it as the Underachiever Method because I said wealth through underachieving, which was great. And one thing that this was a huge lesson learned, which is the reason Ed and I became so successful in the guru marketplace despite the fact that when it came to actively trying to sell stuff to the internet marketing crowd, we were some of the worst marketers ever, you know, we still did well. And I think the reason why is because we didn't bullshit around about who we were or what we were about. Up until that point, the common selling position of anybody in the internet marketing game was, I'm so-and-so, I make a lot of money, I'm awesome, you should listen to me because I'm so awesome, and everybody else sucks, and I'm great, and I'm just totally killer, which worked really well for a while, but it was obvious that the market was sick of hearing that, and you could tell they were sick of hearing it because you go to seminars, and they're like, man, this is really starting to piss me off, you know. So we took a completely different approach, which was, hey, let's just be honest with the people, show everybody who we are, warts and all, and hope that they like us. So our position was, we're Frank and Ed. I'm Frank. I'm just about completely retarded. And this is Ed. He's Australian and therefore foreign, which clearly means he's a terrorist. We are, as you can tell, quite clearly total morons. But despite this obvious glaring fact, we still manage to be pretty good on the internet, and we'll show you how we do it. And hopefully it'll work for you. But if it doesn't, that's cool. You know, we'll give you your money back, no problems. And it was the message that the market wanted to hear at the time, and it was a true message. You know, we weren't faking it. It's like we really are regular dudes. You know, I mean, you've met.
No, but yeah, you were these average guys, and people were like, you know, this isn't some guy in a suit and tie up on, you know, up on stage with this, you know, super professionally, you know, made video with green screen effect. Here's a guy talking to me with his webcam, you know, and you know, and they're taking me along on these rides, you know, they're taking me along to the back doors of magazine shops in Australia, and you know, they're just showing me goofy stuff that has nothing to do with marketing, but I'm getting to live through these guys, and this is, you know, this has become the reality marketing that I want to be part of. I remember I got the Underachiever course from you, and I remember, you know, getting my back end membership, and just so much crap would come through my inbox every day, just, you know, 17 ways I made $16,000 yesterday. Like, who's going to open that subject line? And then there was, you know, something from Ed or from you, and it would just be this video that I would just stop everything I'm doing. You weren't teaching me too much, you know. Half the times it was just this, you know, here we are, we're in the middle of nowhere, and you guys were wisecracking, and then you'd segue into some good learning or something like that, which was really cool, and it became addictive. You know, I couldn't. Wait for the next video to come out from you guys just talking about nothing. It was just so interesting.
Well, we modeled after Seinfeld, you know. That was a show about nothing. So we figured, hey, if that was the most successful show in the history of the world, then we can have a pretty good little web business talking about nothing and occasionally intersperse it with some brain-dead obvious marketing stuff, which is all we knew anyway. Like, you know, Ed and I were very upfront about, hey, we don't know any really big secrets. You know, all we've ever done is done a very poor job of trying to rip off what guys that came before us did, you know, Dan Kennedy and Jeff Paul. So if you really want to know good marketing stuff, go see them, but we'll give you some mechanics of how we built these sites, you know, and here's how we wrote our sales letters, and here's what we think you ought to do, and it just worked. And it goes back to affinity, you know, and we're very fortunate because we are like our market, you know, so we didn't have to fake it. But if you can sell something to people and you can be like, listen, I am like you, therefore you should listen to me, they believe it. You don't even have to say, therefore you should listen to me. Like, if you're like your market and they say, oh, here's a guy like me, then they're going to be naturally and subconsciously prepared to receive your message with open ears and be more receptive to what you're saying. And in our case, we didn't have to fake it. You know, if you go to an internet marketing seminar, it's primarily a bunch of dudes, and they're primarily regular dudes, and they're a little bit older than you and I, Mike, but not too much older. You know, usually a little bit over 40. I'm 35. I don't know how old you are, but, you know, not like a lot older than us, and they like make wisecracks. You know, and they drink beer, and they like to do stupid stuff and play video games. So there was no real jump for us. You know what I mean? It's like the market could just see a couple of regular dudes who were making money and demystifying the whole process, and it worked out really, really well, which was great.
Yeah, I'm gonna be 40 next month. October 26th is my birthday. I hit the big 40. But you hit the nail on the head there, Frank. Because what's interesting about internet marketing is that none of us were grandfathered into this. You know, for the most part, it's it's a 5-year-old industry. You know, for some people, it's a 10-year-old industry. But the way that I see it now, it's really a 5 to 7-year-old industry. And every single person that's doing something online has a story like you do, a story like I do, a story like Armin, who used to sell Electrolux vacuum cleaners. You know, nobody, you don't talk to an internet marketer. There's not a single person, except for maybe Mike Mers Jr. over here in my office, that you talk to. And you say to them, well, how did you get started? You know, nobody says, well, you know, my grandfather was an internet marketer back in, you know, 1942, and then he turned it over to my dad, and my dad taught me everything. You know, we all have this other story about, you know, pushing carts around a supermarket and, you know, and just, you know, firing our boss or whatever it was. And, you know, there's a couple of us that never worked for anybody before. But for the most part, we are just regular guys, and you know, Frank, I know that you've probably seen it. I know I did it to you, you know, at the big seminar where I saw you for the first time. You know, it was just like, boom, there's Frank Kern and there's nobody else. And, you know, just walk up. I got nothing to say other than, hey, Frank, my name is Mike. Just wanted to let you know I'm on your newsletter, and I'm a big fan of yours, and I just give you that, you know, that big doe-eyed look, and I have nothing else to say. And you know, you probably don't even remember that, you know, but I do.
I was very young at the time, so.
Yeah. No, of course. But, you know, I mean, and, you know, and I see that now, too, where people will come up and you know, they're just like in a, you know, the state of awe. And then hopefully we get lucky enough where I can say, hey, you know, why don't we go out to dinner or and then, you know, well, maybe somebody is fortunate enough where them and myself can get together for, you know, maybe a whole day away from an event or, like, just get away. Like last time we were in San Francisco, took a couple of guys out to the Googleplex, and then you just start hearing, like, you know, later on the day, wow, Mike, you're such a regular guy. You know, I had no idea. You're so much different than I picture you on the Internet. And I'm like, of course I'm a regular guy because I'm a regular guy, and Frank's a regular guy. We, you know, we live these goofy, normal lives, and, you know, we get yelled at when we go to the Department of Motor Vehicles, and they send us to the back of the line, and, you know, it's just, we're just, you know, regular people, and I think what you and Ed did was really, really show that. I think more than anything else, people really identified with the fact that, wow, these guys are regular guys, and they're having success, and all I have to do is follow what they're telling me to do, and I could be a pretty successful regular guy too. And you guys had a lot of incredible success stories, so congratulations on that.
Yeah,
so Frank,
I think another reason we were able to make it work is because we truly didn't give a damn about whether or not people liked us, you know. And that's not to say you should have this adversarial, hey, if you don't like it, screw you relationship with your market. But I already had the niches that were working out really well for me, so I didn't really need the income. And Ed was already rich because he'd started some businesses and sold them and did really well, so he didn't need the income. So we actually came out and said that. We were like, listen, you know, we don't have to do this. And if you like it, that's fine. If you don't, that's cool, whatever. But this works, and yeah, and that's great. And we didn't have that pressure of, oh, man, you know, I hope they like it, and I hope they buy our stuff. And when you get out of that mindset, you know, people can smell that desperation and fear, period. And if you eliminate that from your presence, and I think you have a lot better chance of getting a favorable response from your market because they feel like you're confident and for real instead of someone who's desperately trying to make a sale.
Yeah, so good point. And so, what type of things are you doing? Are you doing now? What type of marketing are you doing? Because I know the underachievers are going on informally. There's no more formal training going on. So, what type of things do you delve in now?
Well, I became again by accident the launch guy isn't the right way to describe it. I guess the email copy guy. So. You probably, well, I guess you already know the stories, you know, but... right now, my main thing is, obviously, I have my niche businesses, which are truly my main thing, but I will soon, again, enter the crazy world of internet marketing and teach how to sell stuff to large masses of people using email, building relationships. And I fell into that once more accidentally by having very successful product launches of my own, being the underachiever method, and then the ultra underachievers thing, and then the serializer seminars. That was $1 million, cumulative $1 million in orders in a period of less than, I think, an hour. So that was nice, you know. And I did those.
Just so everybody knows, Frank, I know you did basically a lead up to that event, and from what I remember, I couldn't see it because it was sold out when I got there, and I couldn't believe what I was hearing. But basically, there was no copy. You told people it's coming, it's coming, it's coming. You put up a PayPal button, right? From what I heard, something like that. That was it, and then it sold out so fast that you had to go and go log into your account to the website to deactivate the button and take it off the page. And when you got back, you noticed that like you oversold comments by like 7 orders, and you had to like refund almost $200,000 worth of sales or something like that to some pretty unhappy people that thought that they made it. Wasn't it? It was something like that, right?
Oh yeah. So Serializer, there was a sales letter. Nobody read it, and it was a good sales letter.
Okay.
It spent like $10,000 to have it written by Harlan Kilstein, but people like it sold out. It was crazy. The first go around, first of all, Serializer. I never told anybody what Serializer was during the launch sequence for this thing. I just said, listen, I'm making a lot of money. I'm using this ninja stuff, and here's proof that I'm making a lot of money. Here's an example of one of the websites I'm using to make some of this money. I've got other ones, and I'll show you how I do it, but it's going to be ridiculously expensive, and I'll let you, come buy it on whatever day it was. And I was selling 38 or 39 seats at $10,000 each. And I did this launch sequence completely by the seat of my pants. Like, I had an idea, like I'm going to shoot a video and then see what people say and then shoot a video response to it and blah, blah, blah. But long story short, it goes on sale and it sells out. And, I can't remember, man. I'm doing this by memory. It was like 16 minutes or 30 minutes or 4 minutes. No, it was 9 minutes. That's what it was, 9.
It was under 10 minutes. Yeah, 10 minutes.
So it's 9 minutes the thing sells out, and between the time it took it to sell out and the time I was able to take the sales letter down and then take the web page, the order page down, I'd sold 13 more sales, and I had to go back and refund those people immediately, $130,000, which it totally blew me away. So I took in like $500,000 almost in 9 minutes. I had to give $130,000 back because, I promised that the class would be limited. And my big thing was, man, these people are going to think I'm, being uncool by not letting them in the class, and they're not going to believe me or whatever that it really sold out. So that happened, and then I sold Serializer too, like 6 months later, and that was like $600,000, and I think that took like 30 minutes or something to sell out. So that was awesome. And prior to that, I had done the Ultra Underachievers launch and the Underachiever launch. And what's funny is Serializer was only to my list of 8,000 people who I never mail. I haven't had actually recently, like in the past 30 days, I've allowed new people to subscribe to my list. But up until that point, I hadn't taken on any new subscribers since 2004. And Serializer.
Yeah, let me just explain that to people. People might be wondering how does Frank Kern have a list of 8,000 people? When you had that situation happen with the FTC, you had a list, let's say 100,000 plus, which I know was more than that from what I've heard, but you were in such a state of shell shock, basically, that what they did to you, that you actually deliberately hit the delete button on your entire database. This is what I've heard. I don't know if that was the case.
Yeah, it's true. I was like, man, I'm going to make this niche stuff work. I don't want to fall back on the internet marketing stuff because it would have been easy to do, right? I've got the list. I could just keep on cranking out stuff, and next thing you know, I'm in the same boat that I was in. And I was like, screw it. I want to make this work. And then if it works, I can go sell the story of how I did it, and get back in the game that way, but be the real deal guy. It was important to me to be authentic. I don't want to be selling something if I don't know absolutely that it works and if I haven't done it first. Kind of like you don't want your lieutenant to lead you in somewhere that he's not going to go. You don't want him to be like, okay, man, you guys go over there. I'm just going to sit back here. You're not going to feel very confident in that scenario, and I wanted to have the same thing. So, I deleted the whole database. I was like, screw it, man. Now that I don't have this crutch, I have to make it in the niches or in something, or else I'm screwed, and it worked.
Was that easy for you? Was it easy for you because you were motivated, or was it, difficult? All right, here we go. I'm going to do this, and there's no turning back, and, I can't believe I just did that. I'm curious what that feeling was.
It was very liberating. It was totally simple, man. Because I was motivated, and I was pissed off, because despite – I received, 90% support – from the marketplace when the FTC hit me, which was amazing because I just thought I was going to get, you know, ripped to shreds. And then I got like 10% of people just being uncool and posting in forums. And I was focusing on that 10%. And I was like, you know what, screw these guys. I'm just going to delete everybody, to hell with it, you know. Let them go on to somebody else. I don't need this crap. So I just deleted the list and vanished, pulled a Howard Hughes. You know, and that was the last anyone saw from me for a long time. And I got to work and did what I needed to do. So it was cool.
Way to go. Kind of like a drug dealer, you know, just saying, well, that's it. I'm selling the crack house. I'm walking away from them. You saw it as something you didn't want to be part of, and it forced you to really, like you said, say, I don't have a choice now other than to, you know, make this work. And you know, to me, that's a really great story. And then through that, Frank, your other 8,000 people are really more customers, right? Because then you got back in with the underachiever, and you know, you did maybe a couple of opportunities for people to enter their name and email addresses here and there on some of those launches. But for the most part, a lot of that stuff, you have really good relationship with that 8,000 people through a customer base of some kind, right?
Well, yeah, I always, whenever I sell something, I always try to make sure it's really good. And then my list, if anyone's on my list, they know that, you know, that I don't send out a typical email. It's usually kind of crazy and half funny, and a lot of times I'll recommend stuff and I won't even use an affiliate link. And if I haven't bought the product, then I'll say, hey, I haven't bought this yet, but it's probably cool, you know, so maybe you should check it out or whatever. And I try to give good content and give a good story, so I don't abuse my list, so therefore they like what I have to say. And in the case of Serializer, it was what people wanted. Like, now since I've become known as, you know, I've got this reputation as being the greatest email copywriter in the world, which is like I didn't have enough pressure. You know what I mean? Now I have to live up to that. I don't know who said that. It was nice of them, but that now, you know, come on. So now people are like, dude, how do you do these incredible launches? You know, because I worked on the StomperNet thing, and that thing was the biggest in history, and pipeline profits was like $1 million point something, or maybe $2 million, and I don't know, 4 hours or whatever. And I did the thing with Neil Strauss, the annihilation method, spearheaded that thing, and sold that out. It was over $1 million bucks in 4 hours. So now it's like, now that's, you know, become my new identity in the internet marketing world. I've gone from niche guy to like this freakish launch guy, and they're like, dude, how do you do it? And the first step is have what people want really bad right then. And in the case of Underachiever, that's what people wanted really badly. You know, everyone was pitching them like, here's how you make money referring me as you know, being my affiliate, or here's how you make money in a downline or MLM. And Underachiever was, well, you know, here's how you make a little bit of money selling stuff you can be proud of. And people were like, oh, that's great. That's what we want to do. You know, so that's why it worked. We could have gone out there and done a horrible job marketing, and it probably would have worked. Same with Serializer. It was, hey, you know, here's how you take, like, little niche websites that are doing okay and inject them with this mystery fluid, and now they're like these psychotic niches that, as you can see by the screen cam video, make over $1 million. And that's what people wanted, you know. Same thing with Annihilation Method, which was Neil Strauss's seduction course. Here's how you pick up girls. Who, you know, it's easy to sell that to men who don't pick up girls who want to. You don't have to really be that good. And add insight.
Yeah, well, yeah. And you're a, you know, as you said, you know, one of the best, if not the best, I would say the best email copywriter out there. And you know, for those listening on this recording, you know, Frank and I are part of this evil underground take over the world mastermind that, you know, we deal through email with some pretty top people, and we're really tapping into it very, very well. In fact, that's how Frank and I were able to. Frank said, "Hey, man, you know, if you'd like me to get on there for your crushers, let me do it." And I said, "Great, let's do it tomorrow." So that's how this came about, through this evil mastermind that, you know, to take over the world that we're doing. But I was talking with John Reese just about a week and a half ago at my event in San Francisco, and he said, yeah, you know, Frank came over and was helping me with the blog rush, and, you know, that guy's a friggin' genius. I said, yeah, he's a smart guy. He says, no, I'm telling you, he is a friggin' genius. He's one of the best marketing minds I know. And to me, you know, that's like, yeah, I agree. You know, he was the first guy that got me into this. And I think that, you know, we could say, because what it is, you know, the tangible thing is email copywriting. That's what you do, and that's what's had success. But I think, Frank, something that you know, of course, that part of it is that you have an understanding. You understand the psychology of marketing, maybe better than anybody else out there. You know what people gravitate to psychologically, and I'm excited to learn what you're going to be talking about in this email copywriting course, because you just know how to connect with the market. You have these things. Did you invent that expression, the reluctant hero? Is that something that you coined?
I did. I don't know if I'm the first one to ever say it, but it just kind of came to mind when I was talking about the modalities of selling online. And first of all, thank you for what you said, and that was nice of John Reese to say, too. John, no sleep Reese, man. During that blog rush thing, we were up for 2 days, and I could have had this nice, relaxing vacation, and I had to open my mouth about one of the videos. I was like, dude, that really doesn't make that much sense. You know, what you're talking about syndication credits, and all people really want is exposure to their blog. Next thing you know, it was like 20-something hours later, and the video dude's there, and we're rewriting the whole script for the video. I'm like, man, I just wanted to goof off, you know. But, I mean, here's the deal, and I think the reason I've gotten this stuff is because I'm one of the only guys who's really paid attention to it. Like, the easy way to approach marketing is to be like, okay, well, here's what the dudes before us who got rich did and said to do, so if we do what they did and said to do, then we'll make money. And that has worked really well. But the guys that we've learned from, you know, guys like Dan Kennedy and Jeff Paul and Jay Abraham, the true, and Claude Hopkins, you know, and the really old school guys like that, the true pioneers of direct response, they, for throughout history, had worked with this old media. Old media being direct mail, remnant space ads, like print media, like, newspaper, magazine.
Classified ads, yeah.
Yeah, and television and stuff, and these are all like kind of old media. And right now, we are literally, for the first time in history, able to reach people through multiple different contexts of communication. So it is all about context. It's all about your reader, your prospect's frame of mind, and what they're doing. So we have these tremendous advantages and tremendous new ways we can communicate what we're after with people. So, like, never before has anyone had the ability to reach millions of people, to get in front of millions of people, like, overnight. But now we can. Like, if you and I have a new product about gardening, for example, and we want to put that thing in front of millions of people and see how it does, we can call email brokers, like legitimate email brokers, not spam people, and say, we have this gardening product. Do you have an email list that'll fit it? And they'll say, yes, we have, 4.7 million people who are interested in gardening on our email list. It's going to cost you $8,000 to send a message to them. We say, okay. Next thing you know, 24 hours later, bam, it's there. Like you can literally build an instant relationship with people and communicate with them on an ongoing basis to influence their behavior. And it's never, ever, ever been done before in history until now, until like the past 5 to 10 years. I'm going to say 5 because this stuff really didn't start happening, in my opinion, until about 5 years ago. Because now we have people can subscribe to our blogs, see what we're doing every day. They can get on an email list. We can communicate with them every day. They can subscribe to our YouTube videos, which we can upload and get in front of them every single day. And all the way up until now, that was never able to happen. You just simply could not do it.
You're right.
You know, you could buy daily radio ads, but you didn't have that feedback from the market. So that's another advantage.
Right. Nothing was instant. Nothing. Right now, we have, just instant marketing. You can instantly get a message in front of someone. And with the social marketing involved too, very, very quickly, other people can get feedback from other people. See somebody else say, "I just purchased this a minute ago. It's great." And it's definitely this new media of marketing is completely different. It changed the whole game. And obviously, there are things, there are principles that are foundations in direct marketing, but as you said, it's a new game because it happens instantly. It happens dynamically. It happens with it's social, and if you do it wrong, people find out very quickly, just as well, and you get results very quick. And it's very interesting, and you're certainly pioneering that. I truly believe that the stuff that guys like you do and Reese and Andy and Brad and myself and stuff like that are somewhat revolutionary because, Frank, I hear, I was on stage at Rich Schifrin's event, and somebody said to me, How come, you know, the big corporations don't do some of the stuff that you're doing? And this was like during a speaker panel. So the microphone came right to me, you know, first. I happened to have the microphone. And I said, the reason why is because they don't know what the hell they're doing. And then, like, the crowd started laughing. And I said, no, I'm serious. I'm being very honest with you. These companies don't know what they're doing. I said, I had an opportunity to go to Trump University and meet with the president of this of Trump University, and he's got his marketing guy there, and they're in this office. It's a total mess, a complete and utter mess. The guy that I'm talking to hasn't been with the company for more than 4 months, and he brings in somebody else, and I'm looking at the website, and I said to them, well, you know, I see you guys got real estate and you got stocks and, you know, you got financial planning and you got entrepreneur. I said, when people come to your website, like, what's the flow? What do you want them to do? And the guy just looks at me. He goes, we just want them to buy something. And I said, no, I understand you wanted to buy something, but, like, what is your core product? And he looks at the other guy and he goes, what would you say our core product is? And the guy says, I don't know, we got that $47 product in real estate, or do you think it's maybe the $397 product that we do with the stock investing? And I said, like, you guys don't have a marketing process, a funnel that somebody, the ideal situation, somebody would come to the site, they would do this, and they're like, no, you know, we just basically, you know, want to buy something. And I said, well, first of all, the first thing that you're doing here is you got too many choices when people come to the page. If you're not going to bring them to a specific landing page from where they came from, at least you have to ask them, are you interested in real estate, stock investing, entrepreneurship, or whatever the case is, and then drive them somewhere. And I said, the second thing, you don't have a single place on this entire website where you're asking for somebody's name and email address. And the guy says to me, quote, what do I want their name and email address for? We don't want to email them. We just want them to buy stuff. And then I just looked at Tom, and I was just like, I can't believe what I heard. And then I'll see stuff sometimes in, you know, in the forums where people say, you know, how come companies like, you know, Tony Robbins International and Donald Trump, you know, Trump University, they don't do this type of stuff. These are multi-million-dollar companies. Obviously, they know what they're doing. And just another quick side note on that, Mark Pasha, who is one of Tony Robbins' partners in one of their product development companies, has a website. He's actually on your newsletter, Frank, and my newsletter. When I posted the picture of me with Tony Robbins, he contacted me, and he told me who he was, and I was like, wow, you know, that's really interesting to hear from you, Mark, and from Chloe. I know you guys. I've seen your videos. I've seen your work. And he says, yeah, we'd like to get some consulting with you. I said, with me? Yeah, great. What can we do for you? I'd love to help you. He says, we got a website. We're getting so much traffic, and we got Tony Robbins behind us, and we got his products, and we can't make any sales. So when I hear that, it's just a validation of the stuff that you're doing, Frank and Reese, and stuff like that. We are the real guys out there that are seriously marketing and testing and learning and studying and learning the psychology and sharing the methods and stuff like that. And I do think there's a myth out there that these big companies actually know what they're doing, because they don't. They're just a bunch of corporate executives going through a revolving door of who's getting hired, who's getting fired, who's moving up, who's moving down the corporate ladder, that there's just a small handful of them that when I go to their websites, I say, wow, these people, this is a diabolical marketing mechanism, and then I'll actually share it with somebody and say, this was absolutely brilliant. And not very often does that happen.
Yeah, man, if you talk to Tony's people, I mean, just get them on the ball with that email stuff. I've been on his email newsletter list forever, and it's usually moderately good content sometimes, but, you know, I mean, it's just your typical slick brochure in the email-looking thing that I'm sure very few people really respond to or do respond to as much as they could if it was written as, like, a person writing to you instead of receiving, like, you know, something that some teenage kid handed out as a flyer while you're walking down the road, which is what that kind of marketing is. So best of luck with dealing with those guys. I mean, the opportunity in that company is huge. But it's true. I mean, nobody really does this stuff. And it's not like we're these super genius guys. I think we have the unfair advantage of this is all we've ever done. You know, like, we didn't go to Harvard Business School or whatever, so we didn't get it pounded into our heads as idiotic stuff that doesn't work. You know what I mean? We've been out here in the front lines, specifically on the Internet, so this is all we've known, so we, you know, how could we not be doing a good job of it? That's all we've ever done. We didn't have to unlearn any stupid bad habits. We just had to enhance the good habits that were taught to us by the men that came before us, such as Dan Kennedy, Jeff Paul, J. Abraham, Claude Hopkins, and so forth. But it's interesting, what we have now is such a tremendous opportunity not only to communicate with people instantly, but to have that dynamic feedback. Like, I think you'll agree the most powerful way to do a sale or to do a sales presentation with someone is sitting with them one-on-one, because you can communicate with them through different modalities. You have sound, you have sight, they can see your body language. You have sound and sight, you can listen to them, give you feedback. You can look at their facial expressions and see what they're feeling and thinking. You can show them things, they can show you things, and it's the best way to communicate, right, in person, one-on-one.
Right.
Well, with the Internet, we come really, really close to emulating that experience. And what I've done is taken, like, the concept of a herd of people and just condensed them into what I believe to be just one person, you know, called The List. That's his name, you know, The List. And I view, like, a list of people as one person. And when I'm doing these email campaigns or whatever, I do it dynamically. So, you know, you send out a broadcast with a video or whatever, and then you sit back and you watch The List and pretend The List is a person for those body language cues, or to see what The List says to you in response to that, what objections they give up in response to that, so you can tailor your next message. And it's almost like you're having a dialogue with one person that's stretched out over many days. You know, so it just takes you a day to formulate your response to whatever they said. And The List can give you this feedback now, you know, through blogs, through emails sent back to you, and replies to the emails that you send to The List, so you can really tailor your exact response. So I think this moment in history right now, we have the biggest advantage to sell things that anyone has ever had, period, because we can come as close to humanly possible as emulating that one-on-one experience through marketing, and we can get in front of millions of people if we want to almost overnight at the press of a button. And with that said, that's what I've developed, like, over these years, and that's why I've been able to do these crazy product launches that have really taken off well, because I understand that it's all about context and psychology. You know, when we market to people on the Internet, it's an entirely different context. Someone reads an email in an entirely different frame of mind than they would if they're watching an infomercial or if they're clicking on a PPC ad. Someone reads a blog post in a completely different frame of mind, totally different context than they would read something if they were reading an email or if they're reading a PPC ad or responding to a banner ad. And understanding what frame of mind people are in and why they're doing it helps you target your message even better, and therefore leads to monumental success.
Yeah, I agree that, you know, copy is copy, but you got to understand the framework it's in. And I try to write my emails with that in mind, thinking that, you know, this person's going through their inbox right now, and they have a mission. And their mission is to get their inbox from 68 to 0 as quickly as possible. They got their finger on the delete key, and they're hitting delete without opening email. Delete, 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 delete. And then they see an interesting subject line, they open that and they put their finger back on that, you know, on the mouse scroll, and they're ready to hit, you know, the delete button very, very quickly. So you know, it, like you said, when somebody's on a blog, maybe they're there because they were searching and they're willing to spend more time with it. And I think, like you said, I think email is a whole other game. It involves copywriting, but it has to be conversational. It has to engage the person. I love to do these little things with them, you know, basically. Well, let's say if there was a Super Bowl game or something like that, you know, just let them know that this is a real-time email. You know, hi, first name, you know, I hope you enjoyed the Super Bowl. My team lost. I hope yours won. Anyway, and then I'll go on so that, you know, just it captures them in the moment, and it just identifies with them real-time. And I can't help myself. I think I'm kind of like you, Frank. I'm a little bit more of a long-copy email guy because I get into stories. And I'm conversational, and I'll say things like, you know, I know you're probably wondering about that. Hold on, give me a second. I'll get to that in just a minute. But first, I wanted to talk to you about this. A lot of that type of conversational stuff that I've learned from you and watching your swipe files and stuff like that. And, you know, there's times for short email, but for the most part, when you got something pretty big to talk about, you're a long email copy person as well, right?
Absolutely. And people read email for two reasons, and a lot of folks, in my opinion, get the two reasons mixed up. They read them for content and character. And here's what I mean. The content, obviously, if we have an email list and it's about marketing and stuff, we want to get some content about marketing. The character is more of, what's that guy up to now? What's he going to say this time? You know, I wonder what's going to happen next. And in my opinion, character is far more important than content. Not to say you shouldn't give good content, but that's the reason people open emails from their friends, is to see whether, you know, I wonder what Jason's up to. He just sent me an email. What's all this about? You know, what's he going? What's going? I wonder what happened last night when he, you know, went out to dinner with that girl that he met at the body piercing class or whatever. You know what I mean? It's always following along the lives of whoever they're in dialogue with. So you have to get into the mind, the contextual mindset of the person reading your email. You know, and you want to emulate that relationship that they would have with their friend, and that's exactly what happens. Oh, I wonder what he's got to say. You know, I wonder what's going on next. It's very like, oh boy, another lesson in, you know, PPC strategy 101. You know, they're in a school. They might say that's why they're on your list, and they might be on your list originally, for that matter, to get the content, but they stay and they continue reading based on the character development and the relationship that they have with you, or the perceived relationship they have with you. And that's where we open this entirely different can of worms with communication. That's what email marketing is. It's just developing that character, developing that bond, that one-on-one or perceived one-on-one bond with people individually, and then, you know, collectively as the list, and doing that under the radar and doing it with several million people at one time. It's a lot easier than it sounds, fortunately, or else I wouldn't do it, you know. But it's important to understand why people are reading the email in the first place. And selling an email is an entirely different animal than selling in a sales letter or selling in a print ad or whatever. You know, it's usually very ineffective in an email to come out and say, buy this thing right now, unless you have some sort of build-up, a backstory is the reason why. I personally much prefer the under-the-radar thing. And if you are overtly selling something, it's very effective to make fun of yourself for it, I think.
Yeah, I've noticed that. I don't know what it was. I saw a video of you, I would say it was about a month ago, and I actually used it in my email, and I'll explain how I did it. I know what it was. You did a video for, like, this traffic regenerator type of thing, right?
Yeah, that thing's cool.
Yeah, that brilliant video, by the way, and it's a great product, absolutely great product. And, like, what I liked what you did is, like, you said you were actually, like, transparent. You said, just hang out a second. I don't even know what's going to happen. Either this video will redirect or there'll be a link underneath. Whatever the case is, it's going to redirect to my affiliate link and make sure you buy it so that I can make the $11 off you or something like that, you know. And, like, you know, you joked about the fact that, you know, you're going to get paid on this and it's a small amount of money or whatever it is, and it was insignificant, you know, at one at a time, but you were really telling people about it because it just works. And I thought that was pretty cool. I've used it so far in two email promotions. One was for a $17 product, and I told people, this is my affiliate link, make sure you click on it so I can get my, you know, the same type of thing, you know, so I can get the $7 and go out and buy lunch tomorrow. And I had a couple of people, like, reply to me back, like, you know, Mike, you cracked me up. And meanwhile, I'm like, hey, you know, I swiped that from Frank. And then recently for Reese's Blog Rush, I deliberately used my blogrush.com/?, you know, 1-877-599, this real big screaming affiliate link in there, because I was talking about how it's going to get you syndication credit. So I was like, here's my affiliate link. When you click on it, I'm going to get traffic from when you join. When you join, you'll get one just like it too. Your link will look similar to this, and when you give it to people, you'll get traffic when they join. And again, that's just from, like, watching you just being, like, you know, just being transparent sometimes. I'm not saying, you know, I would use it every time, but you know, I think it's pretty interesting when people see you being that transparent sometime and not being afraid to say, that's my affiliate link, you know, and that type of thing.
Well, I think it all goes back to I can't remember the guy that first talked about this, Robert Collier, maybe, but you're entering the conversation that's in your prospect's mind. Like, in all of these cases, we're talking about sending emails to the business or the internet marketing niche, you know. And
correct.
First of all, they've already received tons of email about BlogRush in this case, right, or whatever it may be. And second of all, if you do disguise your affiliate link or whatever, they're still going to know it's an affiliate link. It's not like you're going to pull one over on them, and they're like, oh, well, he's just recommending this out of the goodness of his heart. So you take something that could be perceived as a flaw. Maybe. I'm not saying that selling things as an affiliate is a flaw, but you take like a perceived flaw or potential flaw or whatever, and you just turn it into a joke and you admit it. And you're like, yeah, who cares? It's no big deal. And what you're doing by doing that is really very powerful because you're covertly, I guess, coming out and saying, hey, I'm just like you. I think this is silly too, even though you're making money on it. But still, you're implying like, aha, this is all fun and games. And you're also saying, hey, we're the same. We have the same thing. You and I are the same guy. I'm one of you. This is great. We're all in this thing together. And you're making them laugh and keeping them entertained. So it's powerful stuff, and it just helps you because, like I say, you're not fooling anybody. So to say something like, here's my cleverly disguised affiliate link, and then you give the link, and you say, be sure to buy this, so I can make the $17 and retire to the life in Mexico that I've always dreamed of. It's funny, but you're still telling them to buy. And you know what? They're going to be better pre-framed to it. Even though you're jokingly saying, be sure to buy this thing, they're still hearing that subconsciously. And they're also picking up on retire life in Mexico, always dreamed of. And that's kind of like super deep stuff, actually, but it's still there. Like, you can say things jokingly, and the subconscious mind is still going to pick it up. Like, if you go to frankkern.com, you see my headline is something like, join my list and you'll make $1 billion instantly. And then there's an asterisk, and this is not really... but still, like, as funny and silly as that is, I'm targeting the people who want to make money, and there's a command, join my list, and you'll make $1 billion. Well, everybody wants to make $1 billion, and even though I'm clearly joking, it's still speaking to the subconscious mind. And I get people, I don't even advertise that thing, and I still get opt-ins every day. I don't know where they're coming from. So it's...
So, Frank, is that how somebody can get on your list, somebody that's listening, if they want to get on your list and get hypnotized by your evil covert emails, they can just go to frankkern.com and join your newsletter, which I highly recommend. If you want to see, just a master at work, and you're just going to really love his newsletter, if he ever sends to you.
Yeah, I sent one out the other day, as a matter of fact. It was just wild and crazy, But, yeah, frankkern.com is where you can go, and I don't remember it. You'll get one autoresponder message, and then everything else is broadcasted in real time as it comes to mind, and you will eventually get the pitch for the much-awaited and hinted at and alluded to mass control email marketing course, which shows how I do all this stuff. I'll give you an example of another funny way to present an affiliate program. I sent an email the other day. It was a three-part email, and I don't really recommend like promoting lots of different things in one email, but in this case, I just wanted to, and I didn't feel like writing long, lengthy promos for everything. So one of the things I wanted to promote was a product sold by a guy named Andrew Fox, and I'm totally blanking out on the name of the product now. It's ClickBank Affiliate something or Affiliate?
Yeah, it was something like that, right, the $77 a month one.
Yeah, my brain is totally locked up on it. But anyway, everything you ever do can have a backstory. It's got to be true. But, the important thing in email marketing is content and character, right? And in order to even have people follow your character and absorb your content and do what you tell them to do, they've got to open the damn email. And so, you've got to rise above the noise. And one way that I love to rise above the noise is to be dramatically different from everybody else. And one of the easiest ways to do that is just to copy the tabloids. So I wanted to promote this thing from Andrew's, right? Well, I know Andrew, and the first time I ever met him, we were getting liquored up at a seminar somewhere. So the subject line of my email was name, drunk kid gets rich, and then in parentheses, plus some actual content, exclamation point. Now, I'll just kind of break down that headline for you. First of all, drunk kid gets rich is something that if you're interested in getting rich, you're going to have to read just to see what the hell it's about. Right, like even if it wasn't from me, even if you're not on my list, and it was like the from line was from Satan or something, you still read it because you want to see what the hell do you mean drunk? I'm not even drunk, and I want to get rich. What's going on? Maybe if I get drunker, does that mean I'll get rich? This is great, And then like in parentheses, plus some actual content is a joke, And it's referencing the fact that everything everyone's getting these days is pitching, and lo and behold, I'm actually giving you some content, and what a surprise, wink, wink. You know, so I won't read the whole email, but I'll get to the part about Andrew. So the subhead that leads into Andrew, this is after several paragraphs of me talking about another website, is Drunk Kid Gets Rich, Depravity Follows. All right, all capital letters. I love to write like Hunter Thompson a lot of times, and that's what that subhead was modeled after. Hunter Thompson's the guy that wrote Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. I recommend that everybody read the book immediately. It has nothing to do with
my thing.
It's just damn good writing and damn good instant character development and bonding. Like, bam, you know, two paragraphs into the book, you know who the character is and what he's all about. So anyway, that's the subhead, and I'll just read you the quick little thing. Actually, the depravity was there long before the getting rich thing. Back in 2002 or so, I met this kid named Andrew Fox, big, Irish, crazy as hell, and stewed to the gills. We both were. It was at a party during some seminar. Anyway, Andrew was selling stuff as a ClickBank affiliate and doing okay. We rarely talked business, mainly sticking to the game plan of madness and debauchery. After that, Andrew went back to Ireland, and I sort of lost touch with him, except for the random 3 a.m. phone call from Belgrade. We never spoke. Fast forward to now. Andrew's hit the ripe old age of 26, and he's killing it. Check the site out. Then I give like a little redirect to my affiliate thing. Now, you notice how conversational that is? I mean, that doesn't sound like a pitch or anything. It's just like me talking about some dude. Like, if you really want to learn how to write this stuff, just tape record yourself talking to somebody, you know, and have it transcribed and write like that. So then I go on. I talk about, like, Andrew's new thing, and then the next subhead is all caps, warning, danger, doom, and gloom. Okay, and here's where I get to what we were talking about. I'll read it to you. Okay, maybe that's overkill, but I do want to be straight up with you about Andrew's site. I haven't seen the product. I'll get it next week when I'm done with my current project, but for now I don't want to lose focus. With that said, here's my recommendation for you. You should get it because it's probably good. Andrew doesn't screw around, and he clearly knows what he's doing. See the screenshots here, and I get the web address. Plus, he's a good guy, and I can vouch for him. Also, if it turns out that the product sucks, you're cool because he's selling it through ClickBank. So you can always get your dough back and still keep everything, even if Andrew joins the cult and moves to Los Angeles or something. With that said, you can make up your own mind here, and I give another link to the website. But it's a great way of standing above the noise, right, and just entering the conversation in their mind. Because you know that, like, every time you get an email from somebody recommending an affiliate program, you know that dude hadn't seen that thing. You know what I mean? Like, it's really a real review. You know, oh, I just got off the phone with my friend, insert name here, and boy, is this going to be cool, insert affiliate link here. Everybody knows right, that's bullshit. So if you haven't seen the thing or whatever the glaring obvious fault is, just come right out and say it. And then, you know, and don't say, oh, you should get it because it's going to be great. Say, you should probably get it because it will probably be good. But if it's not, which it may not be, you're okay. You know, just tell the truth and you're going to be fine. Yeah. Just make it fun and engaging.
So fair.
Yeah. So that's,
and you know, I know, Frank. You write a lot of email for people, and I kind of like the model of writing the email in the vendor's voice and letting somebody do an intro, let them do their own backstory and then say, here's the email that John wanted me to send to you. So you're still getting that. You can still get that perfect message out in the copy paste format of a good selling email, that it allows the affiliates, like, don't just like dump it out there, but put your own backstory in there. Like, you know, I had an opportunity to, you know, to meet Frank in Los Angeles last week, and then give it your own backstory, and he told me about this, and we sat down, we opened up our laptops, what he showed me was pretty interesting, and I couldn't wait to get a copy of it, and finally I could check it out, et cetera, et cetera. So anyway, here's the letter Frank wrote that he wanted me to share with you, and then we could pop that entire email in there, but it's important to definitely get that backstory in there and still be able to, you know, to put an email in that, you know, that we know that somebody worked hard on that can still work for the, you know, for our audience.
Yeah, and this, you know, and you're giving yourself, like, even in that example, you're giving yourself a great opportunity to have them tune in tomorrow to see what happened, because you're telling a story. Like, in this case, we're going to optimistically assume that they're interested in what you and I had to say, and they're interested in what happened while we were sitting there, and they would have found it entertaining if they could have, like, seen what you were looking at on the laptop, right? So assuming that this actually happened, it was all true, of course, you could say something like, oh, by the way, before you read this letter, be on the lookout tomorrow because I'm going to tell you about the CD, what was on the CD-ROM that Frank forgot he put in my laptop. He's going to shoot me when I show you this kind of stuff, but I think you'll get a kick out of it. Talk to you tomorrow. By the way, here's the letter. Bam. So what you're doing is you're, like, setting up this character character development. Like, what is he talking about? You know, naked pictures of Frank and some donkey? Who knows? You know, he left the CD in the laptop. What could it be? And then the next day, he'd be like, yeah, Frank left the, you know, Frank's going to shoot me about this, but I got the graphics files for the course he's coming out with. So here's a sneak preview of it. Doesn't he look funny in that picture standing up there holding the thingy? You know, oh, well, that's hilarious. Kern's trying to look normal for once or whatever. You know, one thing I remember when we were talking about this course, and my favorite part of it is the X method. Now, I can't really tell you what the X method does specifically because that's his job, but I can tell you the results of it and blah, blah, blah. And then you go right back into the pitch and, you know, and this, you're telling a story and you're weaving in relevance to the whole thing. And, again, it's got to be true, folks. I mean, don't make stuff up, you know. But you can definitely make things that might be boring and make them sound interesting. You know what I mean? So, like, oh, here's a sneak preview. Becomes like, oh, this was left in my computer. He's going to kill me. Isn't this funny? He's trying to look normal, whatever, blah, 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 and bam, you know.
It's almost like you have a gift for it, Frank. It's almost like being not only just a good storyteller, but being able to tell a joke. When I picture you, like what you just did right there, just beat out of you, like so naturally, it's like the person that can just get in front of five or six people, and somebody says, "Oh, tell them about that joke," and having the ability, you know, to tell the story of the joke and the right inflections and the voice tones and everything. You have a gift for that. So I think people are going to have a lot to learn from you if they can get on your newsletter at frankkern.com and then find out, you know, when your product is coming out. I'm excited to see it. And Frank, I appreciate you giving us so much time today. I know you have to go. You got a family. I know that you sent me a personal email last week that the aliens have selected you, and they're going to be taking you away from this planet, and I'll be staying. I know that you told me that, so I know I got to let you go so you can pack to get with the aliens. And before we go, I just want to ask you this. Copywriting. What are two books or two people that you would say these people are the most influential for you with copywriting? What would you recommend to people before we run out?
I would go to johncarlton.com. I think it's actually
MarketingRebels.com.
Yeah, and get Carlton's thing. I mean, that's single-handedly, without question, the most influential copy for me. And then anything by Dan Kennedy. Even if you don't buy anything by Dan Kennedy, just read the sales letters that sell the stuff by Dan Kennedy, and you'll be okay.
Okay, great. Any $15 book off the shelf? You were mentioning Robert Collier and guys like that. Is there any $15 book somebody can go to Amazon that you like? You know, over the years that you were like, wow, this is maybe the only one I need.
Yeah, one that gave like a huge like oh my god, many oh my god type revelations was Scientific Advertising by Claude Hopkins, which is actually in the public domain and possibly for free, but, you know, come off the $10 and get it in the paperback book because it's just invaluable, tremendously valuable stuff.
Great. Well, thank you, Frank. I appreciate it. We'll wrap this up so you can get back to your day. Myself, Eric, Dan, and Jim from Job Crusher, and all the members here, we're so thankful to get a couple of hours of your time there, and for you to just offer it out there out of the blue. I didn't even ask you; just threw it out there. I was just blown away, and obviously I jumped on it right away because I knew the members would love it. I never had a chance to talk to you really one-on-one, other than, you know, the call I got from you at 11 o'clock about a month ago, and that wasn't the type of call I'd love to have with you. So other than that, I just want to. I want to thank you so much for coming on, just giving your time. It was a great call. We're going to get this out to the members and send an email as soon as I hang up the phone. So thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Sure, man. Good luck, everybody.